Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
This is wonderful. This is wonderful.
This is.
This is wonderful. It's a show we talk about things we like, things that are good, things that we are into. And I'm feeling really great this morning. Can you tell? Oh, spring in my step this morning.
Is that true?
No, it's not. I'm not going to. I'll keep it 100, as the children say. I have a sore butt. My butt and my butt muscles are sore. It's all these dang stairs. And it's toned. Oh. Don't get me wrong. Like, and I know it's for you, babe, how toned it is. And I know you like that. But all these stairs are really doing a number on my heister.
We've been doing a lot of walking, too.
Doing so much walking up so many of DC's. DC is famous for its hills. How sort of mountainous it is. Huh? I know like people like to call it the swamp, but here's the thing about swamps. They go down into the swamp, but then you have to go up to get out
That's
of the swamp,
true.
Too. And it makes your heister hurt so bad.
Well, and you've been lifting. You use
and
a
I've
lot
been
lift, of butt.
I've been hitting the gym
Well, I mean,
for lifting I meant the big
boxes,
weights, the biggest weights they have. The biggest weights that they have at the gym. And yeah, I do the boxes to kind of complement the barbells and dumbbells.
Uh-huh.
And
how much you
1500.
Whoa.
Pounds.
Cool.
1500. I'm up to 1500 pounds.
Cool. I should make you lift me more. I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean that would be nothing to me because you don't weigh anywhere close to 1500 pounds. I could lift up like a bunch of yous.
Yeah.
Easy and juggle you in the air. Like Gaston does with so many babes, and this is wonderful. Did we say that part?
I think so. We talked about.
Let me check my list here. Talk about the show's wonderful. Talk about how sore my heister is. Okay, yeah. I think we're good to move on to what's the next segment here. Small wonders. Do you
small
have any
wonders.
Of those?
Yeah, I do actually. As you were going on and on about your physical prowess, I was thinking about a small wonder.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
But you know, hey, we're moving along at a clip now.
We sure are. Chugga 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 chugga. Don't let go of the handlebars.
I wanted to talk about our double stroller.
The double stroller. When you are a parent of two children and you get your first double stroller. It makes you feel like a real dipshit for ever owning anything else.
Well, I mean, when we only had one, we really only needed one stroller.
Okay, but you know what I mean.
So we don't have the traditional side-by-side.
No way.
Because I thought that was kind of cumbersome. And also, if you only had one kid in there, people would be like,
what happened to the other
one? Where's the other
one? Yeah, right. But when you get it in the kind of Mario Kart double dash orientation that we have it in, where Henry can kind of like skitch on the back, that's a cool ride.
I thought a lot about this because I didn't want to purchase one and, you know, immediately think this was a waste of time. Because we already have the one-person stroller.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I realized I didn't want the width that came with the side-by-side. So I got this stroller where there's like a little bench in the back for the kid to sit.
Sure.
Of course, immediately upon opening and discovering the stroller, Henry was like, well, where's the side-by-side?
Yeah.
It's like BB and Dot have the side-by-side. Where's our side-by-side?
No.
And I said, no, but look.
Front to back.
Look at this little bench. And he came around because it meant he didn't have to walk.
That's his favorite. I would say of all the points about it, he is a fan of that. We got a wagon, too. Big wagon.
Thank you.
From Nana and Gaga.
Yeah.
Took a ride on that around town, just picking up babes and having ourselves like a cool weekend.
Henry immediately was like, we can have meetings in this. So,
yeah.
So him and Gus were riding in it, and Henry was trying to have a meeting with Gus.
A boys' meeting.
It was pretty great.
About, you know, Legos.
He was using his like fancy businessman voice too, which
Jesus
was really
Christ,
great.
Jesus Christ, it was good. Did I say Jesus Christ? I don't think that's his name.
I don't know. We're both a little tired today.
That's really true. I'll say The Rehearsal, the show from Nathan Fielder.
Yes.
Which, whom I adore and whose previous work, Nathan For You, is,
I
would say,
mentioned
pound
it.
For pound, maybe. Yeah. Did we mention The Rehearsal?
It may have been we've mentioned Nathan For You as a small wonder, I believe.
Yes. The Rehearsal is, it takes a lot of the energy of that show and takes it to a, I almost said logical conclusion, but I don't think there's anything really, like, it goes so far beyond what you think is possible. The premise of this show is that Nathan Fielder devises these incredibly elaborate ways for people to prepare for real life situations. Most of the time, it is like a challenging conversation they're going to have with somebody.
Yeah, episode one starts with somebody who has to kind of admit something to a friend, and Nathan shows up and is planning to help him practice that.
But goes so far as to like build an exact replica of the bar that they go to for bar trivia, and the lengths to which he goes to like make it as accurate as is possible is where a lot of the comedy lies.
Well, and it's also fun because it's an HBO program, and you can tell that he's kind of flexing that HBO budget.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun.
And it also, like, there is a line that it walks between reality and, like, scripted comedy, I would say. And trying to, like, figure out where that line is hysterically funny, because there's also some things in this process that are so morally dubious that, but the show kind of like plays with that in a way, and trying to figure out like how far it actually goes.
Yeah. I mean, here's what I'll say. Like, if you are uncomfortable watching awkward television, this is not the show for you.
If you enjoy watching, I would say, high concept television, this is about, I watch a fucking lot of reality television. This is about as high a concept as it gets.
And I would say that there are people that like Nathan For You that might not even like this show, because it's not as goofy.
It's not as goofy, but it is like, it's way more ambitious.
Yeah.
I realize we are sort of talking in circles around the thing, because I think that you kind of need to watch how it develops. It's only five episodes.
I don't want to spoil anything.
And each one is like a, is I don't know. There's an episode in this season that me and Rachel have both talked about being like, if it does not get at least nominated for some kind, I don't know if individual episodes of shows like this get nominated for Emmys, but man alive.
Yeah, it's so well filmed. The choices he, and I'm assuming the other people he worked with on the show, made to like play this out are so like interesting and unique. And I feel like it should get some acknowledgement for that.
I also think it is improve if you have watched Nathan For You, because he is such an uncomfortable human being, and you really, I think it intensifies the scenarios he finds himself in. In this show, if you know how inept he is at sort of just having a conversation with another human being. Anyway, I think it's fantastic. I also don't think it's for everyone, but
we recommended it to your brothers. Do you know if they hung in there or if they both failed?
Justin, I don't think Justin cleared the first episode. I think Travis made it to about when the show's like through line starts to surface, and I think he might have popped out around that time. Hey, you go first this week.
I do.
We're recording very early this week, so we did just knock one of these out a couple days ago. So I'm feeling like I've already got, like, I'm all limbered up and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I'm feeling more fatigue, I would say.
Well, yeah, that's also just children.
Okay, so my thing might surprise you. My wonderful thing this week is a big head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I am very comfortable talking about how both you and I have large sized heads.
Okay.
This is something that I was a little maybe embarrassed about, and then in recent years have just kind of embraced. And I want you to know that I really like your big head. And sometimes I talk about it in a way that maybe makes you think I don't, but I want you to know that I do.
I never think that. I don't know if what this experience was like for you. You are in general a smaller person than I am, so I don't know that the proportions were quite as like cartoonish as they were for you. But like, I have had the same size head since I was about 12 or so, but the rest of my body kind of didn't get there, and so I would say. Not mercilessly bullied, but like it was always the like, Big hit, like always the go-to.
Oh, really?
Oh, for sure.
I don't think I knew that.
Did you ever, nobody ever picked on you?
People don't seem to notice my big head. Like I have had the conversation with people before, and I mean, maybe it's just out of courtesy, but it was never really acknowledged.
I don't want to under-thunder you either, but like, if I put one of my hats on you,
it is a little bit large, but I don't think, I mean, I think I am a hat size of like 7.5.
Okay.
Maybe 7.25. I don't know 100%, but that's, I mean, that's large.
That's big. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Anything from what I can tell in my research,
yeah,
which was 30 minutes of research.
Good. That's about what we do here at the...
Anything over 7, I think, is where you start talking about a larger head. Because I think 7 is pretty standard for
is
most
it?
People.
Yeah. Christ alive. I no so. Way. 7? No way.
No? I always assumed 7 was pretty... I mean, we... I was telling Griffin once, I was like in a room full of women. This was not long ago. And we were all talking about how we didn't know what our hat size was. So I had this like teenage moment of just like sweaty embarrassment as we went around and measured our heads. And I was like, here we go.
Here it comes. Yeah, I usually rock a 7 7/8, which is such a terrible affliction because they make a lot of 7 3/4 hats. And then for like genuinely very big people, like who are bigger in all dimensions, you can wear an 8+, but that's too big for me. So like I have the hardest time finding hats, and then I have the hardest time not losing those hats like instantly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it takes you forever to get a replacement.
Gone. Yeah.
I didn't realize I had a big head until marching band.
Okay.
We had this like closet full of band uniforms. It was, and you just kind of picked one at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
And so I had to get a very small, you know, like coat and pants. But when it came to the little hat that I had to wear, I had to get the extra large.
Okay.
And my mom was always like, it's because of your hair. And I kind of believed her for a while until I got older and realized I don't have particularly thick hair. And then I was like, it's because of my big head.
It was confusing for me because I genuinely did have extremely thick hair.
Yeah.
Because I didn't
You
get...
still do, I would say.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I wear it. Much, 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 much shorter than
yeah,
I did when I was getting just thinned out at the Happy Hair Boutique every like 6 weeks.
Is that really what it was called?
Happy Hair Boutique? Yeah. Yeah, it's where my mom got her hair cut because like a lady from our church worked there. And so I went there for pretty basically until college.
Is that where your brothers went to? You said that like it was just
No,
you.
I mean, my brothers are older than me, so they wised up a little bit earlier than I did. But I didn't get my first like college haircut from someone who like knew how to handle my stuff until I was like maybe a junior in college.
Yeah.
I was up
how?
There getting my haircut at the Happy Hair Boutique when I was like, you know, legal drinking age.
And you still had no problem just
still
with,
had no problem swoop and poon.
Oh God. So here's the thing. Here's the good news about big heads.
Yeah.
There have been numerous studies and there is not a huge correlation, but a significant correlation between head size and intelligence.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say something else because I know that a lot of like celebrities are like little people with big heads.
I spent forever trying to look for some like actual article about that. And all I could find were like anecdotes, not like a real investigation the way I wanted.
I am just saying I have been in maybe two or three circumstances in my life where I have been in a room where like there were too many famous people. I would say very, very recently I was in one of these situations. When we were at San Diego Comic-Con, where there's just famos to the left and famos to the right, they're petite for the most part. they're quite small with big faces.
Yeah, I saw something kind of suggesting. So there was the thing I kept finding over and over again was Merv Griffin, who apparently like went on record and said, "I specifically chose Pat Sajak and Vanna White because they are small people with large head." And I believe that that looks best on camera.
Interesting.
There's like a suggestion that it makes your like frame look narrower when you have like a large head.
That's wild. I thought it was more like a you know, how like poisonous frogs have like colorful patterns on their back. It's almost like a biological thing. So when you see like a little Tom Cruise with his big face, you're like, whoa, I need to pay attention. I need to keep my eye on that guy.
Yeah, there is a suggestion in one of the things I was reading that like it is more compelling that like the head fills up the screen and people are drawn to it.
That sounds more like what I was thinking.
So I wanted to talk about some of these like little studies I found.
Okay.
And when I say little, I don't mean to be dismissive. It's more like this is the amount of time I spent, which is little.
And we should also say if you have a little head, that's just stand on your truth. This is us sort of, at least it feels like to me, sort of reclaiming the power that comes from a thing that I was mercilessly mocked for as a child.
Well, yeah. And I will also say by the time I get to the end of this, you're going to realize it actually doesn't have that much to do with it.
Oh, okay. So, well, can I just leave and you do the rest of the segment alone? Because I'm riding high right now. This is the best I've felt in years.
Okay, so there was a 2018 study published on Nature.com, which is, from what I can tell, reputable.
Yeah,
even
sure.
Though it sounds pretty like...
Sounds weird for Nature to have a website.
Yeah. That says, intelligence is not a function of how hard the brain works, but how efficiently it works.
Interesting.
So there is a suggestion that larger brains have low neuron density and low neuron orientation dispersion, which means that while larger brains do have more neurons, they have fewer connections between those neurons,
yeah.
Which means they can process information more efficiently.
Okay.
Now, I don't totally understand a lot of that.
None of that, which is ironic, because you would think that my neurons would be like, all right, listen up, it's time for you to learn about us.
But I don't know. I guess that more neurons seems good. And
sure.
They've got space to bounce around in there.
Love it. They're having a great time in there.
There was another study in 2003 from Southampton University that suggests the larger a person's head, the less likely their cognitive abilities are to decline in later years.
Oh, that would be great.
Which I also found encouraging.
Sure.
The one that kind of calls this into question a little bit is a 2018 study from University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That suggests that there is a relationship between brain volume and performance on cognitive tests, but size is only part of it, explaining about 2% of the variability in test performance.
Okay.
So kind of suggesting it's a significant piece, but it's not by any means the whole story.
So you're saying that size doesn't matter.
Wink, wink. So some of the other factors they looked at was educational attainment. There was a suggestion that additional brain size does not increase your likelihood to have completed more education.
Yeah.
So the article says an additional cup of brain.
What? An additional what of what? Don't measure my brain in... Measure your brain in cups.
So this is a researcher from a university in Amsterdam that was part of the researchers in the study said, quote, an additional cup, 100 square centimeters of brain, would increase an average person's years of schooling by less than 5 months.
Okay.
So it's not, you know...
How many cups of brain do you think I've gotten there? If you were to estimate how many brain cups I have. That's tough, isn't it? I don't know what the average brain cups is.
Oh, man. I'm going to say six.
Six cups of brain?
Yeah.
I think it's eight.
Oh.
I guess I'm struggling. Are we talking about liquid cups or are we talking about dry ingredients? Because the brain is kind of like what?
I'm just thinking like a cup. Like if I were to fill a cup like to the rim.
How many cups?
Yeah.
Okay. You think six? I think it would be more than six, hon.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at your head right now, and I'm trying to figure out
from the side profile.
If I had to portion out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might be right.
This coffee cup is like 2.5 cups of brain. And if I hold it next to my head like that.
I think eight is right.
I think it might be eight. I think eight is enough brain cups.
I wanted to talk about a famous person with a large head.
Oh, okay.
So I spent a long time Googling like celebrity head size and sure. like, you know, trying to figure out like who is on record for talking about their large head.
Yeah.
And it is St. Louis's own John Hamm.
Wow, that's not surprising to
no.
me.
No. This is a 2014 article in Vanity Fair. It talks about an interview he had with Seth Meyers, where Seth Meyers said that he set a record in the wig department.
Oh, wow.
And in that interview, John Hamm must have felt pressured to like change the focus because he outed Ben Affleck. And he said, I had a conversation at Saturday Night Live asking if there was anyone with a bigger head, and they told me Ben Affleck. And he's like, I checked this myself. I ran into Ben Affleck and I gave him one of my Cardinals hats, and it sat on his head, quote, like a little toy hat.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good for Ben. Congrats on the nuptials.
I found a website too that has like president head sizes, which I didn't know like how much faith to put in it. I will say the largest head on the list,
Gerald Ford?
No.
Ah.
7 5/8 John F. Kennedy.
7 5/8 is the biggest presidential head size?
That's what it says.
That's nothing. That's nothing. You can't tell me Gerald Ford had a smaller head than 7 5/8. There's no way. I gotta know that dude's head size.
I don't see him. I don't see him on this list. So maybe either we didn't know his head size or this list is extremely dated.
I'll shoot him an email.
The smallest head size on here is, let's see, Henry Ford at 6 7/8. See, he wasn't a president.
No, he wasn't.
So this is just historical men, I guess.
Okay, great.
Because Fred Astaire's on here too.
Yeah, not the president Fred Astaire, famously. You kicked my mic stand.
I'm sorry.
It scared me so bad. I thought a ghost were in here moving my microphone around.
So that's big heads.
Thanks. Can I steal you away?
Yeah.
Okay. Got a couple Dumbo Pops here, and I would love to read the first one because it is for future Bucky, and it is from past Bucky, who says, "Dear future Bucky, I hope that you are doing well and that your research for your master's thesis is coming along. Have you decided where you want to go for grad school 2.0? You have made it through some very hard times recently, but you are so strong and I love you. Tonight, you should celebrate with some mac and cheese and a blizzard. Much love." That's a beautiful sentiment that they have outlined here, which is to say mac and cheese and a blizzard. That's going to get you riding high, I think.
Yeah, although if you had it, it would make you pretty ill.
Maybe, but that is going to touch on the topic that I'm going to be discussing later today, so I'd like to pretend like I'm a cool guy who can eat as much dairy as he possibly wants.
Okay, can I read the next one?
Yes.
This is for future Tay from past Tay. "Dear future Tay, I hope by now things are less buck wild. If not, embrace chaos. But seriously, I'm so proud of how far you've come with the voices of the McElroys in your ears along the way. Hope your 30th is as emo as you want, in the eyeliner, Fallout Boy kind of way. Keep chasing those small wonders and scritch the boys for me. Love, 5 ever, past Tay."
I think that 30th should be the emo birthday. I think that
100%.
When you turn 30, you should be allowed to get as emo as you possibly can.
I think so.
What does that mean? I do not know.
It makes me wonder what I should have been for my 40th birthday.
I think on your 40th is when you get like super preppy. Like
okay.
Preppy, sporty, Zach Morris style sort of vibe.
Okay.
Which I think, babe, would definitely work on you.
Thank you.
It could happen to you. You're all grown up now, a professional adult with diverse interests and hobbies, and one of those hobbies is video games.
You just can't help it. They're so good now.
If that's you, we're here to tell you, you are completely normal.
I'm Maddie Myers.
I'm Jason Schreier.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton, and together we form Triple Click, a podcast about video games.
If you think you might be a person who likes video games, we hope you'll give Triple Click a listen.
Triple Click, new episodes every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Hey, kid.
Your dad tell you about the time he broke Stephen Dorff's nose at the Kids' Choice Awards?
In Dead Pilot Society, scripts that were developed by studios and networks but were never produced are given the table reads they deserve.
When I was a kid, I had to spend my Christmas break filming a PSA about angel dust. So yeah, being a kid sucks sometimes.
Presented by Andrew Reich and Ben Blacker. Dead Pilot Society, twice a month on MaximumFun.org.
You know, the show you like, that hobo with the scarf who lives in a magic dumpster.
Doctor Who?
Yeah!
My thing this week is going to an ice cream shop. When you go to an ice cream shop and you walk in and you're confronted with all the smells and sights and sounds of an ice cream shop, and the excitement that goes hand in hand with that
now,
sensory
are you,
experience.
Because I know your
history,
your long storied career.
Yeah.
Are you differentiating between an ice cream shop and a
no, not a,
yogurt a
froyo
shop?
Place. I would you know, soda fountains, ice cream parlors, a Baskin Robbins, a Country's Best yogurt. I put them all in there. Lump
oh,
them all
really?
In. It's the same experience.
You don't need like the big tub behind the glass case.
I love the big tub behind the glass case.
Yeah. See, I feel like I need that.
But I also, you know, when you see a row of machines at a yogurt land, and it's like...
That is exciting.
That's exciting, too, especially when you get... I didn't even write any notes about samples, but obviously that's like the best part.
Yeah.
Especially when you get those little tiny little paper pill cups. You can go around and you just... Just shoot down little shooters
How
at Froyo.
How wild that they do that, by the way. If you think about it, that's not common practice in an area like in a restaurant where you get food.
No,
you know?
Sure, of course
but,
not.
But in ice cream, it's like it's the standard.
Yeah, so as somebody whose body rejects large amounts of dairy, the risk associated with eating a frozen dairy treat makes it a more sort of... I don't know, thrilling luxury
can
makes
we,
the payoff sweeter.
Can we quickly have you talk about how you realized that you had a sensitivity to dairy?
Yeah, so I used to go to school and be sick every day. I used to go to school and I would feel sick in the mornings every single day. And I could not figure out why. It really started at like middle school is usually when it happened. But I remember being in like sixth and seventh grade and just like going to the doctor. They thought I had like stomach ulcers or something like that because I was sick every single day. And then I remember our family doctor or whatever was like, so what do you have for breakfast every morning? I was like, oh, a big bowl of cereal and milk. And he's like, okay, try something else. And so I switched to something else and then poof. I was cured.
Poor Griffin, too, by the way. Like, cereal was such a, like, major section of the food pyramid.
Yeah, and we didn't really have almond milk back then.
No.
So I got into, like, a lot of waffles.
It was just, like, soy milk, and that seemed, like, so strange to me.
Yeah, a lot of French toast sticks kind of became the order of the day at that time, which, you know, heck, I'm not complaining. So I love perusing the menu of an ice cream shop that I walk into. There's a lot of, I would say, standard ice cream flavors that if I see that they are available, like I'm already like set, like I'm already excited and raring to go. I love in the summertime, I love a mint chocolate chip. I love a strawberry flavor. I love a pralines and cream. I love a sort of nutty, caramelly or a cinnamony ice cream flavor. Those excite me a great deal. I'm not so big on like a chocolate, straight chocolate, rocky road, fudgy fudge.
Yeah, see that is exactly my wheelhouse. I mean, I guess it's good, right? Like we have different interests and that keeps things exciting.
It does. It keeps things very exciting. But then like when you go into a more specialty place like a Ginny's or a Lick back in Austin and you see, you know, olive oil and sea salt or Lick had goat cheese, thyme, and honey ice cream.
Yeah.
And when you see that, it's like, what does that even mean? How is that ice cream? I must know. Like, that's super exciting for me. I like to comparison shop for most things in my life, but rarely do I get more into it for food than I do when I'm at an ice cream shop and see some, like, exotic flavor combination that I did not know was possible. And that doesn't even, like... factor in toppings, which I usually don't mess with anymore. I'm pretty by the book when it comes to how I consume my ice cream. I like a cake cone. I like one big scoop of ice cream right on it. That's all I need.
See, I like some texture variation. I like a crush'em or like a little nug of.
But you go cup. You don't. I can't balance a bunch of. I can't be responsible for eating this mint chocolate chip ice cream before it melts all over my hand and ruins my pants and shirt and shoes and floor of the place that I'm standing over. And also like balancing some gummy worms on top of that.
That's true.
I can't be responsible for all that. I'm a parent of two children. I can't be responsible for that also.
This is fascinating to me because you could just get a cup and then you could have all of those things.
I love a cake cone though. God almighty. I love a sugar cone too, but a cake cone it's because of the sort of structural lattice work happening inside yeah. the cake cone that it's less stressful.
No, that
for me.
Last bite of a cake cone is pretty great.
Can't
now,
eat
if,
it.
If a place has a waffle cone, like forget it. I am on board.
Yeah, but a waffle cone is like, that's a little bit more food than I usually am ready for.
What a strange line to draw on the stand.
If I'm like I said, I can't handle that much dairy. So like a waffle cone with one scoop in it looks stupid.
That's true. And you've got to get at least a few to fill out a waffle cone.
Yeah. And I can't rock like that anymore. I'll die.
I'm sorry.
If I do. But I'm not sad about it. I love a cake cone. I love one scoop. Knock it down in like 5 minutes and then I'm off. I'm away.
Back to business.
Back to work. So one time I went to a Cold Stone Creamery. I think just once. It was across the street from the GameStop I worked at for like a year. I went there once. And it gave me like a panic attack because it's too much.
It's too much.
It's too much stuff. I don't want to get it wrong. You know what I mean? Also, they sang a lot. And that always put me in a really weird place.
When I saw the like, it's like a tip jar thing or something.
Yeah.
Like they're required to sing. And I just watched people tip them. And I was like, why are you doing this?
Stop this. Stop
you have
doing
control
that
over whether or not they sing.
So ice cream in the shops that sell them are sort of a tricky thing to historically pinpoint because ice has been a luxury item for like over a millennium. And people have been putting fruit and milk up on it and eating that for just as long. The first shop that sold something called iced cream opened in New York City at the end of the 18th century, and it was like a treat for the elite. I found an article about how one summer George Washington apparently spent over $200 on ice cream and had his own, and like Mount Vernon had his own like ice cream jars that he could use to manufacture it himself.
Nowadays it would be like, this is where our tax dollars are going. But
$200 at the end of the 18th century. I mean, I guess he just won the Revolutionary War and he was like, time to fucking celebrate with a little bit of that good cold stuff. Around 1800, insulated ice houses were a thing, and ice was more readily available to people who were not U.S. presidents. And by 1850, like further technological advances made ice cream something that like most people could source. Toward the end of the 19th century, you get soda fountains that popped up, and they sold obviously soda, but they did ice cream and floats too. Apparently, this feels apocryphal to me, but I found it in a couple places. Like ice cream floats were viewed as like a sinful extravagance. And so soda fountains began just selling ice cream on Sundays, sans soda. And that is where the term Sunday comes from.
Whoa.
Only spelled with an E, I guess, to like differentiate it from, you know, the Sabbath. And it was also sort of like in World War II times, kind of a like an iconic morale booster treat. Apparently, then there was a floating ice cream parlor in the Western Pacific, just helping out naval service members with their fix. And also, according to the International Dairy Foods Association, Americans celebrated the end of the war in 1946 by eating 20 quarts of ice cream per person annually on average. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
That feels like more than people today. That 20 quarts is a lot of ice cream. Is a great deal of ice cream.
Yeah, because like a pint, how many pints are in a quart?
Four? to six or possibly eight. It's either three, four, six, or eight. It's one of those. It's one of those numbers.
If you think about that, that is a lot of ice cream.
Ice cream rules. Being at a place that has a bevy of ice cream options for you to sort of forge your path through is all, except for Cold Stone Creamery, which takes that way too far. Like they're out of their gourds if they think that a human being is capable of looking at those options and making any kind of like good choice about it and come out of no. Who comes out of Cold Stone Creamery is like, perfect. I picked the perfect one. It's the perfect size, perfect flavor, perfect topping. I crushed it.
I mean, here's the thing. If you are in an environment like that, you choose something that has stood the test of time.
Yeah.
You just go like Oreo, you know? Just like, you get in, you get out. You don't.
But then there's more adventure that you didn't go. Anyway, I love going to an ice cream shop. I am doing this topic because we live very close to a very cool ice cream, like cafe, play cafe thing here in D.C., that we've been to many times now, and it's always exciting going in there and being like, what ice cream do I get to eat? Hooray!
Hooray!
Thank you for listening to our show. That's it for the show. Thanks to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org, check out all the shows that they have there, and listen to every episode of every one of them. Please.
There's tours. There's tours to see the McElroys do their jokes on stage in your hometown.
That's correct. We're going to be in San Jose and Denver at the end of September. We're going to be doing Cincinnati, Detroit, and Washington, D.C., the jewel of the country. In November, and you can come out and see us. There's still tickets for most of those shows, I think. You can go to bit.ly/McElroy tours. Check those out. We also have merch at McElroyMerch.com that you can get that you're just gonna love. It's gonna look great on you, in your room, in your, you know, weird vault that you have, the shrine that you have created for all your favorite podcasts. It can go in any of that stuff, and we sure do appreciate it. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Hey, thank you.
Hey, thank you. We don't say it enough. Nobody really says it enough, you know, in these times. My thing is like, my whole thing is like, if you said thank you to like three people and they said thank you to three people, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, this is beautiful stuff.
Like, if you did thank you to three people and they did three people and then they did three people, that's already like 30 people. And in the world good now, this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
Do you ever kind of step outside of your body in moments like this?
I can't. I have to. I have to be like right there in it.
Yeah.
Or else I can't do the jokes.
That is a definite talent that you have.
Well, I got an 8-cup brain. So.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.